be in your ears.
Ryan Cotter curled up into a ball, trying to gain some respite from the sand that lashed at his skin, scouring every crevice, biting through the material of his clothes. The more he tried to cover his exposed flesh, the harder the sand ripped into him. What the sand didn't scour, the rain did. The howling winds of the storm carried with them a chem-loaded rain that hit hard with each drop. The acid in the water made Ryan's skin tingle. He struggled to cover as much of his flesh as possible. The storm had come upon them quickly, and in the flat landscape there was nowhere to hide. As the dusk became night, the wind had whipped up across the expanse of sand, lifting clouds of the vicious stinging particles and poisonous raindrops that had eaten into the travelers. In the confusion, they had become separated. With no landmarks and no outcrops to provide even the meanest of shelter, they stumbled blindly into the storm, losing sight of one another. Ryan tried to protect his body as much as possible from the buffeting of the storm, burrowing into the loose surface of the desert floor, taking the itching, shifting sands as a preference to the stinging rain. He hoped it would pass quickly. In his experience, these storms had never lasted this long. Maybe this would be it. The deadly rain could go on until he was nothing but a mass of bleeding flesh, nerve endings rubbed raw by the insistent grains of sand. Every fiber and muscle ached as he tried to hunker down lower into the sand, forming a barrier between himself and the storm. It hadn't started like this. A few hours earlier, it was much different. Graphic Audio presents James Axler's Deathlands. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Terrence Acil Ford, Colleen Delaney, Dolores King Williams, Nanette Savard, Karen Carbone, David Coyne, Kate Torrey, Casey Jones, Michael Replogle, and Ken Jackson. Deathlands number 74, Strontium Swamp. Waking from a jump, Ryan Cotter's pounding head felt the effects of his every cell being ripped apart and then put back together again. No matter how many times he jumped, they never got any easier. Getting to his feet, and confirming that he still had feet, Ryan took a look around the chamber. The armor glass was a smoky gray, tinged with electric blue. It was semi-opaque, and he could see the faint outline of the anteroom beyond. It was empty, which was a good thing. And it seemed to be in one piece, which was another. The random nature of the comp-controlled jumps made it a gamble. One day, they might end up in a chamber where the redoubt had been flooded or collapsed, so that the chamber trapped them in a mass of compacted rock with no way out. There were still a few tendrils of white mist around the circular discs geometrically arranged on the chamber floor, so he had come around quickly after the jump. He wondered how the others had fared. J.B. Dix was breathing heavily, slumped on the floor, his hands still unconsciously gripping the stock of his mini-Uzi. His fedora had fallen over his face, masking his features, and his body had the awkward splayed posture of a man yet to come around. Next to him, Mildred Wyeth was sitting against the chamber wall, her head back, her plaits hanging down her back. Her eyes flickered behind her still-closed lids. Slowly, she was beginning to surface from the rigors of the trip. Ryan's attention was taken by the sounds behind him. Whirling, he saw that Christy Roth was coming to her feet. Her long fur coat was draped across her shoulders, and she hugged it tight to herself as she shivered, her lips twisting into a grin as his eye met hers.
Oh, never get used to that, eh, lover?
Ryan shook his head gently, not trusting his parched throat. He marveled at the way in which Christy was able to shake off the rigors of the jump. She looked a whole lot better than he felt as she turned her attention to Doc Tanner, who had been lying at her side. Doc was twitching convulsively, his brow beaded with sweat. He had suffered more than any of them from the rigors of the Matrans. Earlier in his life, he had been trawled through time as well as space, and the resultant physical strains had made him weak. Every time they made a jump, it seemed as if it could be his last. How much longer before his body simply gave in to the stress? Certainly his mind sometimes had only a tenuous grasp upon reality. While Christy tried to make Doc comfortable, Ryan turned his attention to Jack Lauren. The albino youth was tough and wiry, pound for pound perhaps the strongest among them. He was still unconscious, and Ryan turned him onto his side so that he wouldn't choke, for the first thing that Jack did on coming around, without fail, was vomit copiously. The others were all conscious and beginning to return to their normal selves. Soon they were ready to tackle the redoubt beyond the chamber door, waiting only for Jack to fully recover. Jack's progress was always rapid, and the companion's tactic was always the same. Move swiftly but carefully, securing an area and then moving on until they were into the corridors of the redoubt and knew whether there was any immediate danger. In this instance, they were safe. The redoubt was empty, with little sign that it had been disturbed since the new cost that had rendered all of these old military posts obsolete. Howling around him, the storm ate into Ryan, sapping his strength and his will. The iron-hard resolve that had kept him going in these situations was eroding under the storm, the pain of the sands flaying at him, the cold driven into his bones with the winds, and every heavy drop of chem rain. Tiredness crept over him like a blanket, tugging at his mind and begging him to give in to the desire to fall into a sleep from which he would never awaken. He knew the signs of hypothermia, and that to give in now would be the first step toward his own death. He fought to stay awake, to keep moving, no matter how little, to keep his circulation going. If only he wasn't so tired. If only they had been able to rest up in the redoubt. But it hadn't been possible. The redoubt had been empty for a long time, and the old tech powering the comp systems had seen better years. Gradually, the machinery and the plant that powered the redoubt began to break down. As one piece fell into disrepair, the effect spread to another part, so the gradual decline of the redoubt began. As the travelers searched the redoubt, the extent of the shutdown became clear. Corridors were swathed in gloom where the lighting had failed. The elevators were stuck, failing to respond to the call button. Sectors had closed as the key circuits had fused, causing them to fall and jam. Since the travelers had used the redoubts for so long, they knew how to jury-rig the manual override that would raise the doors. Not that it led to anything. The darkened corridors beyond told their own muted stories. The immediate problem was the lack of running water. They had hoped that they would at least be able to shower. But the only water that could be found was the bottled variety kept in the kitchen areas. The pump for the water recycler had long since ceased to function, and the only way to access the tank would be to try to break into it. Even then, all that would await them would be foulsome, stale, and stagnant. Further exploration revealed that dried foods and self-heats were still intact, but anything that had been kept in cold storage had spoiled. At least they would be able to stock up on water and self-heats to take with them into the outside world. For any chance of staying to rest within the redoubt, even without the luxury of bathing, was to be lost to them.
Notice anything?
It's hard to breathe. We're sweating, too.
Exactly. Only we haven't been working very hard, and it isn't too hot.
Huh. Figured the air was stale in here. It smelled kind of musty when we first came out of the chamber, and it's not getting any fresher.
Ryan looked up at the blank ceiling of the redoubt tunnel, as though it would give him an answer. But there was only one real option here.
Cooling and recycling for the air is as fucked up as the water. We're breathing it in, and it isn't going anywhere. If we don't get out of here real soon, we're going to suffocate.
That's assuming we can get the main door open.
We'll take that one when we come to it. Best to get what we can and get up there double quick. JB, you and Doc take the armory. See if there's anything we can use. Jack, Christy, you go back and gather as much water and self-heats as you can. Mildred, I'll go with you and see what's in the infirmary. We do this, and we get the hell out.
Remember, hurrying is going to make it worse. Take it easy, and make every move count. Try to conserve the air by breathing normally. Quick, but not so quick you get short of breath. And let's keep talking to a minimum.
Moving swiftly and silently, with no further need for words, they soon had their tasks completed. For Jack and Christy, returning to the kitchen area and gathering up the water and self-heats was a simple task, and they were soon on their way to the main corridor. Thankfully, this redoubt was of a standard layout, and the other teams had found their targets on the first try. Mildred and Ryan cleaned out the infirmary, the one-eyed warrior packing bandages and dressings, while Mildred went through the drug cabinet to find pills that might still be usable. They moved swiftly and efficiently. On another level, Doc and JB had found the redoubt armory, which was mostly intact. The armorer scanned the racks of blasters on the walls and helped Doc to open a few crates that held ammo. Doc knew which boxes of loose ammo and magazines for SMGs fitted the requirements of the traveler's weapons, so JB left him to this while he scoured the armory to replenish the stocks kept within his canvas bag. The six travelers converged when they neared the main corridor, which led to the exit sector. They took the emergency stairs between levels. Some redoubts were ramped all the way through. Others had only elevators between certain levels. It depended on the purpose for which the particular redoubt had been built. In this instance, the redoubt was a relatively small installation that would have carried a military complement of no more than 100, and had no wags or troop carriers stashed in its depths. A ramp hadn't been necessary, and the travelers were left to make their way up the emergency stairs. The darkness became spotted with bright firefly lights that raced in their vision as the poor air made them lightheaded with the lack of oxygen. It said much about the staleness of the air on the stairwell that the atmosphere of the main corridor seemed sweeter. Every step was now an effort, like swimming through sludge, as they made their way along the corridor toward the sector. The corridor seemed to stretch on like an optical illusion, the doors zooming away into the distance, as molten lead seemed to fill their limbs. If the sector refused to open, then there was no knowing how they would escape. There was no guarantee that the main door had a manual override, though most did. The interior lighting was still working in that area of the redoubt. Maybe that was a good sign. The electricity was working in this section. Jack took the initiative. His wiry frame seemed to dictate a lesser need for oxygen, and his shallow breathing gave him an edge over the others. Measuring every pace, he hurried to the keypad that triggered the main sector lock. Lagging behind, the others watched as though from a great distance, willing him to reach the door, willing the system to be operable. Narrowing his eyes to focus as the extra effort and the poor quality of air made his vision swim, Jack carefully tapped in the numbers and waited. There was no lever to press. It seemed like forever, but could have been only a second or two. The door lifted slowly, air rushing in, and the sand. There was a desert outside the redoubt, and one that had filled the small enclave that housed the redoubt entrance. Most of the redoubts had either been built into outcrops or in small valleys to mask the entrance in pre-dark times. The corridors were usually on an incline, built so that the gradient was hardly noticeable. But still, it made the struggle toward the exit door from the emergency stairwell that much harder. But now they gulped at the fresh air that came in through the opening door. The light outside and the heat that flooded in suggested that it was the middle of the day. The sand spilled down the incline, trails of grain snaking around their feet, around their hands and knees as they sank down, thankful that they were now able to breathe freely. To their horror, they soon realized the entrance had been buried in a sand dune, and the opening of the door had disturbed the sands that were now flowing in at speed. There was sky visible above, but also a vast wall of the almost liquid sand that was slowly sweeping toward them, growing with momentum as the mass began to move. Marshaling what strength he could, Ryan got to his feet, pulling himself free of the sand so that it only swum around his calves. He could feel the growing strength of it as the momentum of the fall built. Unless the travelers moved quickly, the sea of sand would sweep them all back into the redoubt, crushing them against one of the closed interior sectors, suffocating them before they had a chance to break free. JB and Mildred were also on their feet, the black woman casting her eyes around for Doc. She located him. He was still on all fours, looking down, barely aware that the sea of sand was burying him, now up to his elbows and halfway up his thighs. If he didn't move quickly, it would cover him. Jack, recovering quicker than the others, had taken in what was happening and used the flow of the sand to save energy, surfing the sand back to where the others were moving, almost in slow motion. The wiry albino joined Mildred, and they tugged Doc free of the sand, hauling him to his feet. Doc's eyes were staring and vacant. Whatever Doc was seeing, it wasn't the corridor before him. Jack and Mildred began to haul themselves out of the sand, struggling to move their still-living limbs against the flow, hampered by Doc's near dead weight. As they moved forward, Ryan and JB stepped in to help, joined by Christy when they reached the point at which she stood. The six travelers formed a chain, uniting their strength to fight against the flow of the sand. It was like wading through a swamp. The current of the sand wanted to pull them back into the redoubt, but they fought against it, even though their limbs ached, with every fiber screaming for them to stop, to just give in and let the sand sweep them down into its warm and welcoming depths. They crested the wave that flowed from the peak of the wall, struggling until they were past the top and had pulled themselves over the sand. The world swam around them, stars and lights flickering inside their skulls. It was only now that they were on the outside, away from the fetid air of the redoubt, that Mildred realized why it had been such a struggle. Out here, the air was little better. It was foul and hot, the sun heating up the chem clouds that made the sky so yellow. Just to breathe normally, a person had to work twice as hard. Looking around at her five fellow travelers, Mildred could see that Doc was almost unconscious, and the other four were barely able to move. Come to that, she felt herself teetering on the brink. She looked up at the sky, squinting into the intense light. It was impossible to see beyond the covering of clouds, but she figured that it was the middle of the day. If they succumbed to unconsciousness now, they could dehydrate and risk exposure and sunstroke.